What's going up, everybody? It's Sunday again. September 27th.
Sunday again for the first time.
Is it the first Sunday of fall?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll give you that, because I thought about it for a moment, and I was thinking,
like,
no,
hey,
but
what the fuck?
It is. I am Eric. Across the virtual table from me, as always, is Rich. Welcome to the Gecko Gamescast.
It's true, we're here.
We're here. It's been okay. Things have been generally okay. How have you been, Rich?
I've been okay. I've been playing some games, and
I don't know why you bother with that anymore.
That's what the podcast is about.
I don't understand why you even toil away.
Don't let me forget. I have a mental exercise I want us to run at the end of the show. I was going to put a note in there, but I don't want you to see it. I don't want you to have time to prepare. It's much more fun when you do it by the seat of your pants. It is inspired by a really long Twitter thread I saw this week.
I'm scared.
No,
but at the same time,
fun.
I'm excited. Okay. That's great. I'll do that. I'll give you that. Actually, everything happened in the world of games today, this week, at least.
It was a decent week.
Microsoft decided to pull a Pac-Man and eat up everything. Yeah, they just gobbled it all up in one of the biggest acquisitions maybe since ever.
In games, at least. Todd Howard pulled out all the stops with one final ploy, and he has successfully tricked you all into buying Skyrim every month for the rest of your lives.
Which it was the ultimate play. The writing was on the wall for years. So we're going to talk about that, if you don't know what happened there. Amazon's got a new service called Luna. Which, I mean, come on. How is that not going to be successful, am I right?
You can beg them to let you try it now if you want.
Isn't that crazy? You can beg them.
One of the questions, I was looking at it, one of the questions on the questionnaire is, how fast is your internet? You have to give them your ping.
You know how many people are not going to know how to do that?
That's what I was thinking immediately as well. Like, there's going to be
you know how many people are going to go on the Luna for their kids or just for themselves, and it's going to say, how fast your ping, and they're going to say, what the
you
hell is that?
You know how many people are going to look at that, then look up what a good number is and just put that in?
Yeah, they're going to say, what's the recommended number? What do I need to put in to get past there? And they're going to put something that's totally unrealistic. It'll be great.
Like,
I'm
wow,
surprised that Amazon wouldn't
NASA.
Implement a ping service inside of their questionnaire
yeah,
to tell
like
you what
think
it
you
is.
Could click on to
I don't think that's
ping.
Too crazy. I mean, that's, there's free software that does that. Not even software, just sites. They'll just do
that's
it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like, if anything, they should have been like, hey, click on this thing and it'll check your ping so we have that data.
Yeah, I feel like that's genuinely something that's easy to find. But, okay, sure, why not? Bare minimum, I'm down with that.
It asks you for, like, your minimum and then your, like, your highest.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate got pushed to next week.
Hopefully I will still get that a little bit early. I have been chatting with folks over at Larian, who literally got back to me about 2 hours before they delayed the game. So now I at least understand what they were trying to figure out.
Yeah, and Star Wars Squadron's gonna come out.
Yeah,
Crash Bandicoot already coming out to me is pretty crazy.
I'm hearing good things though.
I think that. I don't know when that was first rumored,
it was,
but I feel like that was the incredibly fast turnaround.
It was announced about 3 months ago.
That's an incredibly fast turnaround.
Yeah, it was. I think they're smart for doing it that way. But
I agree.
The more I see of that and the buzz I hear around it, I'm excited to play that. I think it's super cool they went with multiple very different playable characters for this.
You think they're going to have a... well, actually, dumb question. I was just about to ask, do you think they'll have kind of a free transfer over to PS5? Dumb question. It's probably going to be backwards compatible.
I think it's
one I would of be the, shocked if
I'm
it wasn't.
I'm pretty sure they already said it's one of the first games that is, because I may have mentioned this on a past show. Any games that are releasing now
mm-hmm.
will have like this little silver badge icon on the front,
mm-hmm.
Which means they get a free PS5 upgrade.
Yep, I remember that, and that's why I thought.
Doesn't necessarily mean, like, the backwards compatibility thing is, like, that's a very new game, of course. It's going to work in your PS5, but I think it means, like, hey, this is going to get probably better load times and better resolution on the PS5.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how they have those little icons on there to tell you if it's going to be compatible or not. They did say that it was, quote-unquote, 99% of the library will be, so...
Yeah, and that's them saying, like, hey, we've, like, tested shit, so...
So don't worry about it.
It seems like it's going to be one of those things where unless your favorite game is a really obscure, weird thing, you're probably not going to run into an issue.
My Dragon's Crown better work.
I would bet you Dragon's Crown works.
It better work. I'll be upset. I always come back to that game every few years.
People
better
like
work.
That game, Eric.
It's a good game. Speaking of just vanillaware in general, because I know that you just got your 13 Sentinels game.
Yeah.
I remember that Yoko Taro, recently, because they were talking about, Nier Replicant.
Out in April.
I forgot this is totally taken out of quote, so this is just my summation of what I remember. He was saying that in terms of game development, he said even if Atlus as a publisher just kind of crashed and burned, you know, it really wouldn't matter in the grand scheme of things, you know, life would go on. He said, but the world needs vanillaware.
I think.
And he said Japan needs vanillaware. And that cannot fail, and that cannot be stopped, because if you take that away, you take away everything that's good.
Because of a pact he made with a demon as a boy.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of hilarious, but also I stick by that, because I think vanillaware, sometimes they come out with some pretty damn good titles. Odin Sphere was a good game. What's that game that we... Muramasa, I believe it was for the Wii.
Yeah.
That was a good game.
I think that was
vanillaware. Yeah, it was.
So. I had very good buzz around 13 Sentinels, and it was something I wanted physical, so I waited on Amazon to get me a copy from a PS4.
Yeah, these guys have... Their art style is always fantastic.
It's got a little art book.
It's always a very... You want to know something with the vanillaware games, too, speaking of just art books? They always have, like, this storybook quality. Well, that's just the Atlus guarantee. Yeah. I'm surprised it didn't even come with keychains and stickers. Atlus always had, like, the most premium standard editions.
That's what, like,
they just give you so much swag.
Something in there. Like, think about, like, even the weird, like, that Persona 5 Royal fucking, like, the Ultimate Edition I got. And they're like, piece de resistance, here's a fucking trading card.
Yeah. And I know that, you listen,
that
I'm
came
no fool.
Sleeved. That came I, sleeved.
I know, that's, yeah, I know. That was actually the biggest surprise. That's just no sample plastic sleeve. That's a hard plastic sleeve.
Yeah.
I was very surprised. And that's just because, you know what? Atlus never fails. And I know, I'm not blind here. I know vanillaware has a certain aesthetic to itself that's a bit sexualized. But I like it because it always does look like a little storybook. Looks like you're opening a storybook and you're looking at some of the pop-up images.
It'd be easy to scoff at the way a lot of their stuff always comes off as sexualized if the every other aspect of the product wasn't phenomenal on top of that. Like,
yeah, it's not like it's being sacrificed for
they don't sacrifice
lesser qualities.
Storytelling for, like, this overt sexualization of characters.
This is like somebody trying to justify that their anime show is precious.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You're overlooking the rest of it.
You
I was just thinking
finish
about that.
Watching even.
You're not. Me. You're not. You haven't heard the whole story.
You know?
Like, yeah, sure. Dragon's Crown was egregious, but to be fair, everybody in that game
was
egregious.
You know what I'm still disappointed? I don't get enough weird stares for. I guess this year doesn't count. A shirt I used to wear to the bar when we'd go out all the time is I have that Garfield shirt where it just says Neon Genesis.
Yeah, that's one of the best ones. That's one of the best shirts too. Whenever we just talk about Japan's unique style of sexualizing or just doing some funny ha-has in their anime or their products, I'll never forget when in middle school Nick brought in Detective Conan, the first DVD,
mm-hmm.
and because we were talking about murder mysteries at the time, and he brought it in because he was like, hey, because we were big fans of the show at the time. And this is when they still had the English dub of it that was going on for a while. And it was on that late night of Adult Swim where everything was fragmented in episode counts. So you had no idea what the hell was going on.
Yeah,
and I was very disappointed.
Unclear where anything was.
I was such a disappointed kid at the time. But I was a big fan of it too. So he brought it in and he was like, hey, he goes, we should watch this. This is a good show. And he completely missed the fact that in the very first episode, there was already a panty joke, like right away. And, maybe like halfway through, like he found out that a girl was a gymnast because she had linings on her upper thighs or something, and it showcased panties or whatever. And everybody in her class was like, what the fuck? They just looked at him. They said, Nick, what are you watching? And I remember looking at him, and I also felt the secondhand embarrassment because I'm like, damn, if people knew that I was watching this shit too, I don't think I'd be safe either. People would just think I'm a panty fiend.
And then and you just pushed him and you were like, yeah, nerd.
No, I said not a thing. I actually was hoping to every god imaginable that Nick would not sell me out in a fit of embarrassment. And he didn't. He took it on the chin. He just laughed and took the embarrassment. I give him credit for that. He could have just said, ah, Eric watches the panty show too.
Look at him, look at him.
And for what it's worth, I never stopped watching Detective Conan, even to this day. Great, great show.
Yeah, fantastic.
But Vanillaware is cool.
Vanillaware is cool.
All right? It has some good games. So I'm actually curious to hear how 13 Sentinels is. For this week, Donkey Kong Country 2 came out.
It sure did.
So I don't know what everyone's doing, but I'll be real with you. If it's not that, I don't know what more of a discussion we can have.
There's no excuse for it. I didn't actually get around to starting a Switch version yet, but
I don't even want to hear it.
It's ready to go. It's ready to go, man.
Yeah, of course it's ready to go. It's a part of the Surface. You act like you did the due diligence for it. Of course it's ready. It's there.
I preloaded it, you know.
I've spoken to so many people about this because people only know about this game, like, say, Ryan or others, because I always talk about it. Ryan the other day was like, this is a weird claymation game, and I can't get behind the style of it.
No,
and
he goes, Eric, I played the first three levels of Diddy's Conquest. Game's dog shit.
He literally said the game's art style is just weird to me. I'm not a big fan of this whole claymated feel, and I just don't think it looks that great. And I was taken aback. I've never heard anybody saying these things before, so of course I was a little confused. And then I tried to get my younger brother to play it, and he said, you know, game's good, but it's not as great as you're saying it is. So from all sides, I'm learning new things about the people I surround myself with.
Your so-called friends and family.
Yeah, I'm just constantly being bombarded with these negative reviews of Donkey Kong Country 2. And nobody's even giving it a chance out there.
They're monsters, Eric.
I mean, you know, David Wise should be coming to me. Because I'm the one who's preaching the good word, the good book.
Yeah, you're doing the hard work out there. You're doing the legwork.
When Donkey Kong's Banana Horde first was missing, I was there. I helped him.
First one on the scene.
I was. And then what happened again when Captain K. Rool took Donkey? I was there.
By the way, again. I consistently love the idea of King K. Rool simply changing his name based off the hat he's wearing.
Yeah, I know. He literally always just changes his role. Like Baron K. Ruhlenstein.
He puts on that pirate hat and he's Captain K. Rool now.
Baron K. Ruhlenstein in Donkey Kong Country 3 was pretty much just the writing team just saying, actually, I'm giving a lot of credit to even say that there was a writing team. That's just the developers being like, what the fuck can we do now?
All the guys and, smoking weed on Donkey Kong Country 3.
Yeah. But other than that, I've been playing some more Hades, some Monster Hunter, and just Super Mario. I mean, that's really it. There's really nothing more I could say about a lot of those.
Finished Super Mario Sunshine.
How long did that take you?
Probably like 6 to 7 hours to beat Bowser.
Oh, okay. Wait, really?
Yeah.
I always thought that game was way longer.
Here's the thing why Mario Sunshine, I feel like, is deceptively longer than you think. You need, I think, 65 shine sprites to take on Bowser.
Okay.
You need to get more shine sprites than there are in every base level. Like, if you get no blue coins or anything like that, you're not gonna clear it. Like, I cleared every level and got a handful of blue coin stars to get to Bowser.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's one of those things where the 120 stars are hard, the 120 shine sprites are hard to hunt down. It's hard work to get there, but it's getting to Bowser is doable at a pretty minimal amount of time.
Interesting. I always thought it was really long. You know, I've never beaten the game before.
I love that Bowser fight just because I love the aesthetic of it. It is the easiest Bowser fight in Mario history, I think.
All right. Not too bad. Not too bad. I like that. At least it's a lot shorter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool game. I'm going to play Galaxy also, but I played a bunch of Hades also.
Great game, right?
I haven't really played it since it went into early access. This might be my favorite.
So there's probably a lot of things that you're not even familiar with.
I started over is what I ended up doing.
Yeah.
Because there was an entire currency that wasn't there last time. The gemstone last time I played the game. That being said, I was now able to progress really quickly. I've gotten to the fourth area, to the Temple of Styx.
Mm-hmm.
Where the kind of format of things changed quite a bit. That game's so fucking good.
It's good. I know. It's a great game.
this
it's a game that excels not only in the gameplay, but the story is just good. It makes you actually care about the progression, and it constant. I'm genuinely wondering when the narrative trees come to an end.
That's the thing I think I like the most, is because roguelites don't typically do this. It uses the fact that it is a run-based game to tell its story. Like the going again and again is constantly acknowledged. Like, you know, whatever fucking time you get to that first boss again and again, and Zagreus will just be like, "Hey, Meg." Like, they just become so passive about it, of knowing what to expect and what's coming next. Much to the point of like how it starts to feel different when they do things after a while, like throw the other Furies at you. The environments are fucking gorgeous. I want to shake the hand of the man that voices Poseidon.
Yeah, he's always fun. I like him and Dionysus.
Actually, my favorite build is a lot of combo of Poseidon abilities with Dionysus abilities.
They blend together very well.
Call it my drunken sailor build.
There's one Dionysus combo with Zeus, with his electricity, with the festive fog whenever you're throwing your cast.
Mm-hmm.
And it just electrocutes people in there. It is so broken.
Yeah, that
I love
seems
it.
Insane.
There are just some combos that you get lucky with and some that you just don't. And it just constantly... I don't know how they did it, but they were very clever in the way that they got the story and narrative going, and also just with the constant action and different fluid combat sinks. It's crazy how they just keep it going endlessly for each and every run.
I get a giddy giggle every time I pick up a Poseidon emblem, and I just hear, "Hail, nephew!" And I'm like,
"Yeah,
he's back."
The guy's back. I love him.
There's a chaos ability that I feel like is ridiculously good that gets me far. There's one of them. I don't remember what the trade-off is, because all the chaos boons are like, this happens for 3 rooms and then this.
Yeah, and then you get the bigger bonus.
There's one that cuts your health by 70%, but every time you attack, you get 2 health back with the Stygian Blade. And it is ridiculously good.
There's one, I know there's another upgrade too. I think it's just a standard weapon upgrade that you can get from Hephaestus, or his hammer.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you reduce your health by I think maybe like 50% or something, but every hit that you make or attack that you make gives you back 2 health. And then you have to work your way back up through health upgrades. It's such a give and take in the beginning. One of my favorite things with this type of roguelike as well is that it does what Dead Cells does beautifully too, is that you somehow make progress in these games, and it's not because the runs are getting easier, and it's not because your combos are getting better, it's just because you are gradually getting better. And I think that every single time you play, because this is actually the opposite effect, I think, interestingly enough, that I had with the Binding of Isaac. Binding of Isaac, I always felt that it was very contingent over whether or not what kind of upgrades you're getting.
Binding of Isaac, you would sometimes just get a godlike series of upgrades.
Yeah, right in the beginning or in the middle or just whatever. And there are just some times where you would just get crap. And this is one of the... I would even say that this is one of the first big, big roguelikes that were coming out during that time, so maybe this is kind of like one of the founders of these kinds of game styles, but not as roguelike, just as popularized as it was, because it was huge. But in Hades or Dead Cells, I do not feel for a second that I can't do something, and I think that's one of the biggest staying powers that roguelikes have, that frankly I never even got from Rogue Legacy. Even Rogue Legacy, you just had to score a good run and you'd end up getting there. But with Hades, I even feel like if you got even the shittier upgrades, none of them are truly shitty. You just got to find a way to make them work for you. And the only way you could do that, of course, is just by playing more. And I think that really just works towards it. And you never feel like you're doing work because, again, you have this very clever way of layering the narrative right on top of the game. So you still have your roguelike. You're still trudging hours into it. But there is a story element to it that also keeps building upon yourself. And they built it a reputation system in there, so you also don't feel like you're just wasting time. There's always a purpose to something, and I think that's just very clever, and I think it's just worked well.
That's the main thing, because even if you're gonna die, it's like, oh, but now I can go talk to Hypnos again and get some
and I can give him the upgrade, and I can do this.
I also really like, I've only gotten them a handful of times at this point, but in the third area in Elysium, the chance encounters with Thanatos.
He becomes a big part of it.
Those kind of competitions are fucking tough. Like, I think I've only managed to tie him a handful of times.
Yeah, you have to be so aggressive and also just learn the weapons that you have and just hope that you have some decent upgrades, or by the time that he comes, that something's going to work in your favor, because ultimately, if you lose, you lose. It's not a big deal. You don't lose the game, but...
And the Elysium Savior can be running into Sisyphus. My day one boy to refill my Defy Deaths.
Yeah, sometimes I always think that the Defy Death's just a system of being reborn after you die. I abuse that so much, and then I'm thinking, well, I shouldn't really have to. Like, a lot of times I have all these Death Defyments because I have three of them, the max that you can get, you can become reborn three times. And I think I beat it my first time recently, like in this past week, the first time ever. And this is after like 16 hours of playing it. And
You cleared it. You escaped hell.
I did. I escaped it, and that was great. And now there is still justification. This is why I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there is justification for it to continue. And that's what I mean, that the story just keeps going. It's not
done after that.
I just think it's so cool how they just keep it. I don't know how, but I've never had... I've never had the same kind of cyclical conversations. I really haven't. Everything has always just been different in some way, unless I'm just forgetting. And I just think that that's a really... either they recorded hundreds and hundreds of hours of dialogue in this, which they may have, or they just found a way to keep it fresh without feeling so recycled all the time.
My understanding is once you've got it down pat, you can kind of escape within about 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think mine took about... Yeah, 30 to 40, I would say. Mm. I only did it once with that gun.
The gun's pretty good. I used
with the bomb. I forgot what it's called.
I used the Aeris version of it, the one with like the increased damage rate.
Yeah.
That one's pretty good. But I'm getting close. I'm in the Temple of Styx, which I believe is like the last area.
Yeah, that's pretty much going to be like the last area before the final stuff.
I've been hanging out with Cerberus. I know what's up.
And all the weapons are great. There's like six or seven of them. I think that they're fantastic.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good.
Some of them are a little more rigid than others, and I think it's just a testament to you just got to get good, figure it out.
You heard your voice, get good.
But I'll be talking. I'm so glad that this game has been getting so much more exposure now that it's officially released and everybody's loving it, because frankly, it's just it even rekindled just my appreciation for it. It's just such a blast. It really is.
It's definitely going to be on my list this year. It might be my favorite Supergiant game.
Yeah, it's my favorite Super Dragon game. With by and far,
Pyre is a close second. So I really need you to play Pyre when we're done here.
You ain't gonna make me play it. Nah, it's on the list. It really is. Other than that, though, yeah. I mean, I've just been playing Super Mario 64 every now and again, and that's cool. Super Mario 64. I don't know what else to say about it.
I also started Mafia Definitive Edition this week.
Does it hold up? Is it good definitive as
they
were thinking?
Put a lot of work into this. Here's the thing. I don't want to disillusion anyone. This is still an old game. It still plays like a old open world game, but this is a lot more than a fresh coat of paint. Like, visually, it looks like a new game. They did a ton of brand new voice work, which I think is all great. Mm-hmm. And I do think this is the strongest story of the Mafia trilogy. And this is now, I'm about five or so hours in, this is like undoubtedly the best way to experience that story. It's a fresh, new, very polished way to deliver what I still think is a story that holds up really well.
Yeah, for sure. And if you don't have it now, you should look into it. And if you're not a fan of roguelikes, then don't even bother. Forget it. You know, just don't bother.
Never bother.
But don't you worry. It good.
It good.
It good game. Other than that, though... Yeah, I mean, game-wise, that's pretty much it. Let's go into the drop.
Drop. Bringing you... This is going to be your early October drop. First couple things to rear their ugly head. Super Mario Bros. 35 is coming to Switch Online October 1st. Warsaw, which we talked about, is coming to Switch on October 1st. Wise Origin is coming to Switch on October 1st. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, comes to PS4 and Xbox One October 2nd. I'm sorry. I'm trying to fix the weird shit that happened here, but I'm giving up now.
It's okay.
Let's sing Queen comes to PS4, Xbox One, and Switch October 2nd. Star Wars Squadrons hits PC, PS4, and Xbox One October 2nd. And Warsaw then comes to Xbox One on October 2nd. And finally, Baldur's Gate 3 for PC and Stadia has been pushed a week to October 6th. That's early access.
Not bad.
I'm very
and
fucking
I'm
excited
so hyped for Baldur's Gate.
Playing Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, they even when I saw the announcement that they were going to delay by a week, I was thinking, here we go, 2021, and they were just like, no, it's just for a week.
Yeah, when it's a week, all that tells me is like, we have some stuff we want to push to the build before we push it live.
Yeah, they were like, we have the super gamer, as we call it, which is the AI that's supposed to break it. And I was like,
very
wow,
excited, super gamer. And I hope we get a chance to try this out before, you know, within that launch window. For the multiplayer aspects of that game, because I remember them talking to us about it at PAX about how it almost felt like this weird like D&D equivalent thing where like you and I could be in the same game and just fuck off and do whatever and then link back up.
Fantastic. I'd love it.
Very cool.
Very, very cool. And yeah, honestly, I'm just kind of bummed that I'm going to play through it all the way and then have to wait.
Well, yeah, it's only about a third. That's okay. A third of the main story is going to be in there,
which I'm okay with. It let it happen.
I was looking at the races that are in there just to get acquainted with it. I think it's super. Like, I like the prospect of them going with some more obscure D&D 5e races in there, like having like playable Githyanki and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's options. I like options.
I like options. I'm really curious to see how Squadrons is going to do.
Yes. Squadrons, which is a nice buy in.
I'm going to wait till it releases, of course.
It's one of the
I just want to know.
See how it does, yeah.
Is it too good to be true?
It's always too good to be true.
And my gut always says yes, it is. So I want to see if it's exactly what I'm thinking it is or if it's going to be just kind of half baked and we'll see.
Go buy a flight stick.
I know. It's gonna end up being okay. And I'm if sure. It's just dogfighting, I'm down with that too.
Totally. Red 5 standing.
Let it happen. Show topic of it, if you haven't heard this already, this is a big one, obviously. It'll probably take up a good chunk. Microsoft acquired ZeniMax.
What's
ZeniMax? Oh, that's a great question. That's Bethesda, ID, Software, TangoWorks, Arkane, just a bunch of different subsidiary studios that are under that umbrella. The biggest one, obviously, being Bethesda and ID. Even Arkane Studios.
Yeah,
let's give credit where credit's due.
The biggest one is Bethesda. The biggest one in my heart is ID because... Microsoft owns Doom.
Yeah. And frankly, they purchased out the ass for it. What was it? $7.5 billion, which is, yes. I believe, unless I'm incorrect here. I tried looking up other purchases
it's
in history
about,
in the video games industry.
I think outside of video games, a good comparison is it's about $3 billion more than what Disney paid for Star Wars.
Yeah. And that's just in terms of just acquisitions. When it comes to video games, I think this is the biggest acquisition in the history. Video
yeah,
games.
I think undoubtedly. I think by a pretty fucking large margin. Because
yeah, it's insane.
The thing is, for a while, people always talked about like Microsoft's the past few years has kind of had this like if you can't beat them, buy them sort of thing. And I had not heard anything about ZeniMax or Bethesda looking for a purchaser. But
yep.
I think more so the interesting thing here to put is like, oh, that's you know, ooh, look at them sticking it to Sony. And my thought is like sticking it. Here's the thing: Microsoft is a $1 trillion company. Sony is not. Sony could not buy. Sony does not have the money to just buy a company like this. Like it's weird to even have that conversation in the same breath because they just can't do it.
Yep. And I actually think that this is a pretty damn good thing to happen.
For Microsoft, sure. And it could
yeah.
be very consumer good because...
I think it's pretty good for the consumer, actually, yeah, too.
And it's good for people who are in the Game Pass ecosystem.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, frankly, number one... Microsoft pretty much just put on the table to say, hey, you know, you guys... Because yeah. one of the biggest things in terms of narrative towards Microsoft was that they had no games. No games meaning no exclusives or IPs to them. And then they just decided to, instead of making their own game, they buy all the
Can't
games. And, yeah, we buy games now. And siphon them through their service, which was always going to be the long-term play as it came out. And I just think this is pretty damn good. I think a lot of good's going to come from this, because when you think about similar moves in the past, this is honestly all just to benefit. I mean, sure, it's just going to benefit their service, but Games Pass is the most consumer-friendly and most beneficial model in gaming right now. Totally. Best bang for your buck. I mean, I don't understand how anybody suffers. You're going to have people that are going to come from the woodwork and talk about monopolies and all this crap, but this is really no different than anybody else acquiring anything. Yeah. I think it's just because Bethesda's under the umbrella, ID's under the umbrella. You have a lot of popular titles that people are now worried that they're not going to come to, say, PlayStation or their Switch. And to that, I'll say competition is pretty damn good.
I also don't know that that's the case. And I'll run you through this. We know right now, they said stuff that's already kind of been announced will come to PlayStation. After that, it'll be a case by case basis. Things like Deathloop, yeah, and Ghostwire Tokyo, which were already set to be limited time PlayStation exclusives, they're going to be honoring those deals. Here's the thing: I've been thinking about this more and more when I think of like the id stuff and the Bethesda stuff, like Elder Scrolls. Let's use that as an example, because I think it's the big one people are thinking of. Elder Scrolls 6.
Or Fallout, yeah.
Yeah, going to be on Game Pass day one when that game eventually comes out. I don't know that this means it won't come to PlayStation, because here's the thing. Microsoft's been more forward-thinking in recent years, and I don't think they're prepared to leave money on the table.
I just had a very... Oh, I'm sorry. No, finish your thought. I'm sorry. I thought that was it.
What I think you'll see is something like, okay, it's Game Pass day one, obviously. And then it'll be on the Xbox One exclusively, the Xbox Series X, sorry, these names are terrible, exclusively for like a year. And then at that point, their thought process has to be, all right, people who have Game Pass have played it, people who want to own it physical, because those people definitely exist, have bought it. And now any, like, people who aren't gonna get it. So let's bring it to PlayStation, or we're leaving money on the table. I also think Switch ports of games, like all the Wolfenstein games, all the Doom games, all the id stuff, has come to Switch, and I think they look at that like a different market, and I think it's leaving money on the table to not do that.
I'm so glad you feel this way, because I do not feel that way.
Really?
And that's exactly what I was hoping for. Yeah, I actually just had a multi-hour just discussion about this with my brothers yesterday, and I'm talking like for at least I had this whole plan for the day. I had breakfast, some lunch, and it easily took me into the early evening when we were talking about this, and like 2.5 hours went by, but I'm not gonna have that long of a discussion here. My perspective on this is that let's just say for their current titles, yeah, okay, the PlayStation exclusives are gonna come over there, and then they'll eventually get siphoned into Game Pass too. Fine. Things that are currently in development, let's just say Elder Scrolls 6, that will, if there was going to be any multi-platform, that would probably be the one, because it's already currently in dev. I don't think Microsoft's ever going to be like, yeah, we're switching up right now.
That's my main thought, is especially for those, because I feel like Bethesda probably already has a PS5 dev kit for things like Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6.
Right, and that's why I'm thinking, if they were to do that, let's just say that, because nobody at the end of the day even knows what the hell is going to happen, but if they were, I was thinking, you know, maybe for Elder Scrolls 6, maybe for the current titles that are under development and have already been under development for those, they would say, okay, you know, just multiplat it. I still believe that moving forward, I do believe they will be exclusive to Game Pass. And the reason why, and that side, that perspective that you were even just sharing about leaving money on the table when it comes to a retail sale perspective, I think that when it comes to one-time sales of these games, let's just say they released at $70, the standard, which is what we're seeing now. Microsoft knows that the money is in the service, and you have about, I think the recent report that I had that I saw on it was about 15 million or so people
in
Game Pass.
They want you in their ecosystem.
They want you in the ecosystem, and they either want you to sign up on the PC for the PC people, and let's not kid ourselves, the PC branch is not the majority compared to the consoles.
No, but it's where we live.
The consoles are the biggers.
It's where we live.
So they've already touched upon the PC community with just Game Pass. And that's just that's just to make sure that market's secure,
also,
honestly. They got us now. It'll be there.
Important to note,
it's
Bethesda and id are PC developers.
Yeah.
Not as much Arkane, but Arkane, yeah. Like, buying Bethesda, the studios under ZeniMax, are mostly PC developers who later got into the console market. Like, a lot, for me, I think of Fallout, I think of Doom, I think of Wolfenstein, I think of Elder Scrolls. Those are games I play on my PC. And that wasn't going to change regardless for me.
Yeah. And for the majority, too, it's going to be from the console. Which is exactly why they released the Series S, which is exactly why they have their Series X for an increased graphical fidelity option or a bigger power option for those who want that and who care about that. There is, in my perspective, there is no way these guys spent $7.5 billion to make a multi-platform offering when they know that over time they can immediately get people to buy their box and sign up on Game Pass, which in the recurring revenue model that they're going to have is going to make them much more money than they would for first-time purchases.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but that's why I think the timed exclusivity is an important thing, because I think they know 90% of that money is made in the initial window. And
yeah.
I also, the thing that makes me think, and I'm not saying what I said is definitely what's going to happen, it's just
sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the way I said. Think of it this way, too. We now know, because information got out, Microsoft has already been open to putting Game Pass on other platforms. We know they spoke with Nintendo about getting Game Pass on Switch, and that it didn't come to fruition.
Right, and that's fine, but... And this is why, even what I'm saying, too, all of it's just hearsay. Nobody knows what the hell it is.
That's why it all tells me there's so much less about the hardware and more about selling you the game. They don't care where they sell it to you. They just want to sell you the game.
Which is exactly why, though, I think at this point they... I don't know. I don't know about that one. I think that...
Because, you know what's funny? Is saying
they
that
probably believe... I'm just saying you would not... No, fundamentally it's the same thing. I know, because even when with my brothers, fundamentally we agree on the same thing. Which is, it's just the method
just
that they go about doing it.
How they're going to go about
it. Yeah, it's just the method about how they're going to go do it. And my method is... At first I was thinking... Yeah, they're going to timed exclusive this. And then I was thinking, that also just doesn't make sense. Because if you're going to do that, whole hog it and just keep it. Because you know, on all in-house. Because you know what? As much as people want to say that they'll be disgruntled or they'll be disappointed or there's going to be blowback if it's not multi-platform, guarantee you an Elder Scrolls or a Fallout game comes out on Game Pass only, you're going to have people buying the Series X or the Series S. Guaranteed. And
yeah, they'll buy one of those boxes to get the game.
They absolutely will. And they will buy the unit and they will buy the service. And guess what? Because they have the service already now that they bought the unit, they are now going to be a customer for that generation. And that is going to make them so much more money than if they sold it at a one-time fee for $70.
I'd buy whatever box they told me, assuming Elder Scrolls 6 is the Elder Scrolls 6 elsewhere and it's just welcome
exactly.
to the country.
Exactly. And that is precisely why I do not believe in any stretch of the imagination that... For a minute, they may consider the multiplat agreement there. I don't think long-term, no. There is no way that these guys are going to spend $7.5 billion on these properties and then decide to keep them elsewhere. Sony is doing the exact same thing with half of their titles, and nobody's saying shit about that. And that's money on the table. You don't think people would have bought...
No, you're right, but that's also...
Those other properties? But like, say, I'm not talking about From Software even with Demon's Souls. That's just one of... Because that's From Software and Sony doesn't own that. But you're telling me any Sony-owned IP, why don't they go multi-platform either? And why is nobody talking about that? And why is that always just money on the table?
I think there are people talking about that closed door. Like, look at Horizon coming to PC.
Sure, but that's PC. We're talking about... And Xbox is... Microsoft is on PC, you know?
Yeah,
so,
they also own a big chunk of the PC market.
Yeah. Sure, but that's also, and just saying, it's also room to debate.
No,
if we're talking about why Microsoft needs to go multi-plat, well, why doesn't Sony? And then if that's the case too, if that's all just money left on the table, frankly, and I know they would never do this, why doesn't Nintendo or anybody else? So
I read Masters of Doom. They ported Mario to PC, and Nintendo sent them a nice letter that told them to kindly fuck off.
And that's probably just how it all got started. And let's just consider that Nintendo is off the table because they are. But Sony already is showing evidence that they're going to try to come out with their own service. And I think they're starting it with the PS Plus collection to test the waters.
Yes,
I
to see how that fares.
Yeah, they want to see how this fares. And it's because they do not have a model yet So they're going to say, hey, you know, just to start, we have our proprietary games, and we're going to give you everything that we have that's exclusive. Here's the model, by the way, too. You should buy our box. They pretty much just locked up the holiday season, too, Eric, with that, by the way. The PS Plus collection, for me, in addition to Demon's Souls and the others, that was a lock.
Oh, yeah.
Because now immediately I know I have other games for free.
Also, the amount of money I've spent is exuberant. the things I...
So you know you got locked down on it anyway?
Did I tell you what my day one purchase count is?
What?
So I got the box. I got the box with the disc drive.
Okay.
I got a second DualSense.
Okay.
I got the camera.
Wait, what?
The new camera. Because otherwise I can't use my PSVR with the new console.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I got Spider-Man Miles Morales. I got
just the base.
Yeah, just the base one. I platinumed fucking Spider-Man. I don't need remastered Spider-Man.
And plus, you could always just play it again with the backwards compat, but okay.
Yeah, also they even said, like, if you really want the upgraded version, you could pay for it digitally after the fact.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought Demon's Souls.
Okay.
I bought Sackboy. Okay. And I'm going to count this as part of the purchase because it comes out the day before the console. But it's technically a PS4 game, but it'll only be going in my PS5. I bought Yakuza.
Well, yeah.
It'll only be going in my PS5 because I was talking about this with our friend Vinny. I don't know how easy it's going to be to transfer the save data from the PS4 to the PS5. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to start Yakuza the day before the new console gets to my house and then have to start it again.
Well, I'll tell you this. I know that that game... That week, I just bought Demon's Souls with the box. And that's just because I know that if I bought Miles Morales... Number one, I'm going to play Spider-Man again.
Okay.
Because it's been some time before I even beat the last time, and I had a great time with it regardless. I'm just going to beat it again. I don't even give a fuck. Yeah. I don't even give a fuck, yeah. But also because in that week, Cyberpunk will come out.
Yes.
And I'm not...
I'm playing that on PC.
I'm not ambitious enough, let's just say, to... know that I'll tackle all those things at once, which is fine for anybody else who did. Like, I, honestly, even just hearing your list for a moment just got me thinking, like, why don't I just get that shit? But
I at least have that sort of dedication to know that through my developer pipeline, I will have already had Cyberpunk for at least a week before this stuff drops, so I'll have already probably put most of my time into it.
Yeah, I'm going to use all my time to suck into Demon's Souls, but... The main takeaway with a lot of that, too, is just they're coming out with this collection, to kind of circle this back, too. They're coming out with this collection so that you have that as the service, too, to also just lock the holiday season, which Console Wars is bullshit. I don't care what anyone says, but the sales cycle is locked, and it's going to be for PlayStation, for
Console
sure.
Console Wars is bullshit. It's a very good book.
It's bullshit. Did you see their... We've talked about the documentary for this that's coming out for it, right?
I keep calling it bullshit.
It's coming out with the documentary. We talked about Yeah, they're actually coming out. So... but I mean, when we're talking about sales numbers, I think PlayStation is going to win, quote unquote. I think they're going to do better than Microsoft. However, I still am a vehement believer that Microsoft long term is going to come make their money back, and they're going to make a shit ton.
I think both of these companies are going to do fine in the stretch of the
day. Are going to do A-okay. Now, are we going to focus on the minutia of, will they outsell Sony? I don't know. I actually don't know that, and I don't think anybody knows that. I know Microsoft is going to do just fine, because a lot of people were thinking, oh, Microsoft is going to, they don't have any games, well, they don't do this, and now they, well, guess what? Now they do. Well,
here's the thing, too. Like,
and now they have their service, and it's still the top service.
Microsoft is going to do just fine. I just don't know if the majority of the income is going to be from hardware sales.
Not at all. And you know what? Not at fucking all. There's no way. If they did release an Elder Scrolls, and then that would be the console seller.
But here's
just like the Switch did for Breath of the Wild.
The thing, though, even to say that is weird, because it never has been in this industry. Like, companies have sold consoles at a loss in the past. They take it on the chin because the software is where you make the money. It always has been.
And Microsoft is the only one right now who directly looked at Netflix and said, yep, and they're doing that. And they're doing which is, again, another reason why I truly do believe that they're not going to release these outside third party all the time for multiplat. Because you know what? Two different industries, apples and oranges. I'll be frank with that and transparent. You look at Netflix's model, they're not doing that. Hulu's not doing that. None of the media industries are going to do that, which sure, you can say with licensing and a bunch of other minutia, sure, I'll give you that, but I just don't see a reality where You have such a big acquisition. Again, it was very important, as Rich mentioned, $3 billion more than the Disney Star Wars acquisition. Do you think Disney's going to give Star Wars to Multiplan anywhere, or just borrow it for any other proprietary use?
We lend out Vader on the weekends.
Yeah, where are you going to lend Vader? Where is he going? What home is Vader going to go to? I just don't see Microsoft saying, yeah, let's do it. Do I believe Microsoft supports generations and crossplays? Yeah, of course they do. But guess what? I think people misconstrue what Phil Spencer is saying, because number one, Phil Spencer works for fucking Xbox. So of course he's going to say what he needs to say right at that moment. But
he's gonna.
I think when they're talking about generations, I think when they're talking about even just being there for the gamers and being consumer friendly, I think they're talking about this with Project xCloud. I think they're talking about this with games for Windows. And I think they're talking about this with the Series X, all within, as you were saying, Rich, their own ecosystem. I don't think they're talking about this from a perspective of sharing the wealth. That's not how it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, my thought of it is they don't care where you're playing as long as you're playing their games. There's also, like, look at the age of now, we have these diskless consoles coming out. And the point of that is to lock up a thing, because when you are the person who purchases the console without a disc drive, now the only place you're buying games is their marketplace.
Yeah.
They've locked it down.
And that's the way. And guess what? You're going to do it.
You know what I'm...
Because we've done it. Because we're doing this for the PlayStation. This is what I mean. There's no difference. I'm also very interested as to why people online that I've read think that this is a negative, or rather think or lambast Microsoft for doing such a thing. We're talking about Monopoly, because this is no different than if Nintendo did this or anybody else did. Nobody would bat an eye.
No.
Because they've been doing this forever. Everybody always complained that Xbox had no exclusives. So then when Xbox buys the exclusives, all of a sudden it's a fucking problem because they dished out the money?
Why do people want someone to buy Sega so bad? These rumors have been circulating for years, and I don't know that anybody has been, like, they've feigned interest in this. They'd be like, I heard Microsoft's buying Sega. And I'm like, why do you people want Sega to get purchased so badly?
Didn't you say even on last episode that Sega's going to come back?
Sega's coming back, baby.
I could have swore it was either you or maybe I fabricated it because I just wanted to. I want Sega to just come out with a new console again.
No, I've said it before. It wasn't on, like, the last show, but I've been,
just
like...
Just do it.
I've described an E3 before where there's, like, a secretive hush-hush conference and everybody's like, I don't know who's there. And they come out and there's just a big Sega logo. And then you see it, the Dreamcast 2.
If only Sega can come back on its two legs. There needs to be a true third player here. There's only two right now.
Dreamcast 2. You know what its launch day title is? Its launch day exclusive? Persona 6.
Get the fuck out of here. I was going to say Sonic the Hedgehog Remastered.
You know what's crazy, actually, though? But of Sega... Sega, like, first-party studios. If Sega were to come back and make its own console... Atlas makes so many deals with PlayStation. That would be a big loss for PlayStation if Sega made its own console.
That's what I'm saying. Listen, all this competition and this buying and power grab. This is some fun stuff.
PlayStation deal sitting right next to me on this desk.
13 Sentinel. It's just right there. The exclusive. It's gonna really make or break the sales industry.
The Sony execs would come out and Shuhei would be like, "Our anime numbers are real down."
Well, my thoughts at the end of the day with this whole acquisition is I don't even feel too strongly. It does not make any feasible sense for me if I was the business to say, hey, let's do that and let's make it multi-plat. And to just the counter argument that they want to have some money, this isn't just unique to you. This is a main counter argument. Why would they want to lose money for that? I truly believe they did a cost analysis for this, or will do a cost analysis, and find that they will not lose money. They will gain money long term from people doing that. And Microsoft is a $1.5 trillion company. They would have no problem working on a long term model. They are not in any studio position or developer position to say we need the money now. And neither is Sony.
That's just it. They can afford to take that loss.
They could wait it out if the cost benefit was that, hey, in 5 years you're gonna be making some real money out of this. I know for a fact they would probably look at that and say, yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
They're not going to wait a year or two just to... Why? For the Elder Scrolls? Please. You're telling me if Fallout came out on the box? Which, for what it's worth, Morrowind and Oblivion were Xbox exclusive at the time.
Yes.
Let's just slam it on the table while we're here.
Did you see that shit that came out about Morrowind that I think was fucking crazy?
Was it about the reboot?
Yeah.
You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, no, I thought that was insane. So some developer secrets got shared about the Xbox version of Morrowind, and they would talk about how occasionally Morrowind would have, like, these crazy load times, and apparently what was happening was the Xbox's limited memory would run out, so they had programmed something into the software where it turns out to recycle that memory, when you got a super long time on Morrowind, Morrowind was actually restarting your Xbox.
Yep. And I believe it was the first time that any of them on the Xbox side had heard that, and they were cracking up.
Yeah, like that.
Because that's just, it's so preposterous.
It's such an insane, like, that's one of those, like, developer tricks you never hear about.
Yeah, but that's why it's fun. And you want to know something about that story, too, which is why I actually love Todd Howard? He was not even, like, cracking up when he was telling the story. Like, he was smiling and smirking, but he was just because, like, yeah.
He's like, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he just goes, yeah, we had to do that. And he goes, and it worked, and nobody knew. Isn't that wild? Yeah, isn't that crazy? And he was not even, like, laughing with them about it. He was just literally just,
it's just like,
sitting there being,
here's a crazy thing I could tell you about that I think maybe you'll find interesting. And he was right.
I can only imagine that must have been an incredibly stressful moment for them when they were developing that. And they were just like, oh, fuck. Yeah. We hope to God that this works.
We need
works.
To make it
and
cycle the system's power.
Nobody just noticed. I think it's so funny, too, because the more I hear about that, it totally mirrors software in general. Because game dev software, just anything in the tech business, I feel like that's always going to mirror it.
Yeah.
You just hope to God
that
nobody finds out what your workaround is, and it just hopes that it works.
We found
and it
a way to make
it just
this
works.
Work. Hopefully it doesn't cause a problem, and nobody figures out the weird voodoo shit we're pulling to make this happen. Voodoo,
total
voodoo
iceberg
fins
theory.
Coming to the Xbox Series X.
Oh, God, I wish. just a total iceberg theory, though. You don't know what's going on below 100%. Sea level, so... I just thought it was kind of... I agree. That was a pretty fucking funny story.
To keep us going, more weird gaming news. Should we talk about Amazon Luna?
Yeah, sure. Really quick, do you think this is going to be successful?
I don't know. I think Amazon is willing to play the long game, and if it can
they
do
can afford
some
it.
Of the stuff that Stadia sort of promised it could do and still hasn't done, then yeah. If it has launches with more than 10 games, like Stadia did, and continues to only have 10 games, then...
So for the audience at home, what is Luna?
Amazon Luna is another cloud-based game streaming service. It is... Right, it's $5.99 a month right now. It's an invite-only introductory price, which is important wording, because that leaves the door open for this price to go up.
Oh, yeah. As it will.
It for sure will. So, it's a cloud streaming service like Stadia. You'll be able to stream games directly to you. Amazon had a very bullet-pointy presser out about this with all the same shit Stadia had. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about tech setups. You don't have to worry about your power. We're streaming it to you. They've got a controller coming out that looks a lot like the Stadia controller. It looks a lot like a Switch controller. It promises you can stream on two devices simultaneously. It promises seamless transition between devices, which Stadia also promised and failed to deliver on, is important to note.
Yep.
The Twitch integration seems interesting. I think Stadia...
That's the new bit.
No, Stadia promised a similar thing with YouTube, which it didn't deliver on.
Right.
Which the idea is if you are, because Amazon also owns Twitch, if you're watching a game on Twitch and it happens to be a part of the Amazon Luna library, there'll be a button you'll be able to click and instantly start playing that game.
I the more I read about it, the more I felt like, yeah, I was having some true deja vu. And I think that, maybe not, I hope to be wrong, I think that in a year we're going to be talking about how the Luna failed.
Probably.
We're going to talk about how the Luna failed.
It's like how I laugh whenever I see the word Stadia in the drop.
I don't want it to fail.
No,
it's just, it sounds like familiar territory, and this is just another buzzwordy kind of service that I think will be left in the dust
eventually. I believe these services are the future, but believe we're still really finding our footing with them.
For sure. And I even think, I'm on your side, at least with a line of thinking, that if anybody has the financial backing for it to make it successful, Amazon would too. But then again, so did Google. So... You had big powerhouses that pretty much had a lot of money, and
It
kind of, it did not do well.
It's still
so,
going, though. It's important to note.
It is. I gotta say, Stadia's still going. I know I'm sounding like I'm writing it off, and it's because I kind of am, but it's still going, for what
it's
worth.
You're gonna be able to play Baldur's Gate on there in 2 weeks.
Sure, great. I can't wait to do boot that. It up. I can't wait to boot that up. But it's just, I think that they're going to need to come to the table with something. It's going to take a while. It's an uphill battle to even get people on board with that. I'm certainly not even going to participate, but
woo.
I don't have a need for it right now. I don't know what the market is going to be just yet.
Of course not.
So, we'll see. But that was Luna, though. If you want to look into it, let us know. Because I...
Tell them what your ping is.
Yeah, tell them what your ping is and let us know if that even works. Because I'm just seeing deja vu. I have a feeling that a lot of this integration in the beginning is not going to be developed right away. I think that's going to be a long-term bit. And I even think that's why it's $5.99. Even to entice people.
But I bet it's ask.
Because, you know what? As a service, there's going to be a lot of things missing. And you're going to have to wait. And then when it's kind of fully fleshed, they'll say, hey, it's $15.
You have to say, please, Papa Bezos, can I give you $6 a month to stream some games?
Can I have some more games? And if you're really that thirsty for some games, get Game Pass.
Why don't you play our new game, Crucible? And then you got to go, oh, no, thank you.
Oh, no. Thank you, but no thank you. I think that long-term, we're going to have some cloud services, but you want to know something, actually.
I do.
I'll throw this one at you. I'll throw this one at you, because this was an interesting point. And we're talking maybe like another generation out, so take this with a grain of nothing. I think I do agree. One of the points that my brother did mention, which I actually do agree with, is that long-term, Xbox will probably get out of the box game.
Yeah,
eventually. Long term.
I could see them maybe doing another generation of boxes, but I could.
Yeah, I gave them actually one more, too. I said they at least got another one. They got at least another box left in them. A weird naming convention left in the memory banks there. They got another one to dole out, I'm sure. The XYZ.
Either that or this really is the last one, and it was all a trick, like that 75% uptick in sales of Xbox One Xs.
For sure, which is absurd, but it was expected, actually. Even if they have one more box left in them, which I do believe that they do, I think that long term, this is going to be the staple service as Netflix was today when it comes to games, because it already is becoming the best deal in gaming. I think over time, this is going to lead into the streaming service instead of the console service.
Well, xCloud is going to make it that.
Exactly.
Point, you're going to be able to just stream Game Pass to your fucking phone or directly to your TV.
Yeah, it's already starting. It's already on the phones. I can guarantee you, they may still sell hardware when we're talking about hardware, but they're probably not going to try to keep selling it in the capacity where it's their main selling point anymore, which you're already seeing with the Series X. It's there, but it's not really the...
What I think
it's Game Pass.
See is maybe like an Apple TV style thing that is just streaming it.
Yeah.
Or here's the thing, like their main quote-unquote hardware is either like, if you've got a PC, if you're a dude who builds PCs like us, you can download these games directly to your PC, and you're probably going
to
get a little
download
bit
of... Download your games to your games.
To your games. And you're probably going to get a little bit of a performance because you have the files locally. But also, I could just hook up an Xbox controller to my TV and stream it directly to my TV.
Yeah, I can totally... And they are already... The foundation is already there. They're already on multiple different devices. It's going to come eventually. So I think that...
Real quick generational thing to ask you while we're on this, because obviously like that puts me in the whole like, is Sony the only one making a box then at that point? And what does that look like? Do you think Nintendo ever goes away from the sort of console they're making now? Do you think they ever make a console that is not a hybrid now?
God, I wish you were there yesterday. We talked about this too.
Is it just the Switch 2?
I think this is me just again. I cannot say how unfounded this is. I think over time, despite what everybody believes, apparently, I think Nintendo eventually is going to want to catch up, and they're going to have to catch up, and I think they're going to make their own, maybe not box, but I think they're going to try to catch up in the way that they're going to create a similar modeled gaming system that's not already based on what they have.
I don't disagree, but I think it's going to take them a long time like it does with everything else.
Oh, for sure. I am still very much of the mindset that Nintendo has been trying to catch up for the better part of the last console cycle in years. And when I say catch up, I mean they're still continuing their own innovation cycles and still reporting, repackaging the same crap and selling $60 that everybody, including myself, will buy. but I do believe that over time it will come to a head. I think they've already shown that they've taken steps to improve their offering by allowing third party onto their Switch, and which is something that, I'll be honest, I don't even think old Nintendo would have done unless they knew they needed to do it to survive.
The market was different then, though.
Oh, for sure. Well, that's why, too. It's changing. So my biggest detractor, or the biggest argument against what I'm even saying in terms of Nintendo doing any form of change, was that Nintendo does not need to change. And I agree to a certain extent, but I think everybody is in the business to make more money than they currently are. And even I know that Nintendo cannot keep repackaging the same games and sell the nostalgia. They can't. It can't keep happening where it's going to be ultimately profitable and greater margins for them. That's not how the way it's going to work.
Won't be nostalgic for it anymore. Right now, and I feel like we, as like guys in our late 20s, might be the last generation of this, where Nintendo's like our weird old grandpa, which when it makes weird business decisions, we're like, he's old. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, and the information has come to the table with this.
We just excuse
this thought process has come to the table with objections saying, listen, Super Mario 3D All-Stars has sold 400,000 copies since launch.
Yes.
Recently in the week. Which, yeah, okay, great. It did. And I'm going to say this now. That's because this is the first iteration of a port that they've had for these games since they came out. So that kind of tracks. When you go to the old nostalgia channel, yeah, this tracks.
None of those games got ported from their original console, and one of them is an N64 game.
Yeah, and you're talking about one of the one of the pillars of gaming that came out at the time in terms of nostalgia, so that makes sense. But I just think there's something in me that just believes that even Nintendo, and Nintendo has openly spoken about this before, they are behind, and in their practice, they have been stubborn over the past couple of cycles in terms of being on par with Sony and Microsoft. They can stick to their "this is the way we do it" kind of innovation practice, and they're going to be fans of Nintendo, myself included, who are always going to support what they do. But facts are facts. They are going to need to adapt and evolve eventually, and I believe the Switch, fantastic. Yes, I know it's fantastic. I think that maybe they'll stick to the hybrid, but even I can't, I just, there's something in my brain that's telling me, hey, they need to catch up eventually. And if we look at their paid online service now, what do we know about their paid online service? It's shit. It's a shit offering. And that's just facts. I even think later on Nintendo's going to have a subscription service that's going to be a Virtual Boy kind of subscription service where they're going to charge you, say, a couple of dollars a month to play. What
you mean it's gonna be like the Virtual Boy? It's gonna be really unsuccessful?
No, I just think that they're gonna call it the Virtual Boy or something like that, and they're going to add their Game Boy Advance emulation. Going to add their Game Boy emulation, and they're gonna up the cost of their online price. I think they're going to do that over time. And
Localized,
it's not because
Mother 3,
and this was met with such resistance to the people I was talking about at the time, because they're like, why the fuck would they do that? And listen, I'm on Team Nintendo too. I don't even think they need to if they don't want to, but they know that they can make more money this way. They're just slow to the uptick. They always just keep. Think of how much first-party titles Nintendo has released this past year, or even in the past 3 years since the launch of the Switch. Not a lot.
No, it's been a slower year.
It's been bare bones. And you can say 2020 pandemic. I would still disagree with you and say that this would not
do with it.
This would not have anything to do with as drastic, I will say, as a change. I do think that things were impacted, but not to this degree where all of a sudden, the first party offering is just completely nil? No, no way.
And to be fair, I think we're going to see another boom year with their first party stuff. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if holiday 2021 is filled with like 3 big games from them.
Yeah. And there's just evidence on the wall that Nintendo has been slowly changing their practice to just make more and stay as a competing force. There's no reason why they would have opened up their doors to third party unless they knew it was profitable for them. And of course, that's a no-brainer. But then, if they're willing to do that, why wouldn't they be willing to make a new iteration of their they're going to come out with a new Switch.
Oh, I believe those rumors that next year we're getting a 4K Switch.
I thought about 4K, and then I thought maybe not. Even if, let's just say, whatever model it's going to be,
gonna be hot.
It will have it increased graphical fidelity, whether it's 4K or not, but
I don't think it'll do 4K.
They are going to come out with a new updated model for that system. They will.
I think they're going to have one that will do 4K in dock, I don't think they will have one that will have a 4K display on the unit itself, just because here's the thing.
No fucking way.
I think it'll get too hot. I think the 4K unit will also come with a new dock that has an extra fan in it.
There would also be... there would be shockwaves in the technological space if that handheld device could handle 4K.
Because, no, that's the thing. Think of it this way. I think it will be able to handle 4K when it's hooked up to your TV, but it's going to need a bigger dock that has extra fans in it.
Yeah. And I just believe that they are going to make moves to try to not catch up, but stay as a contender in the space with different services. I don't know if they'll release their own subscription service. I don't believe that, but I do think that they will expand their virtual offering, their virtual console offering, which they should have done a while ago. And they're going to charge more for it.
Kind of a subscription service, but just
for games. I think they will. I don't think that they wouldn't. I don't understand why they wouldn't. And you could say, well, because they realize that they can keep repackaging. I would then still challenge you that history is catching up to Nintendo. History is catching up to these guys. And as you were saying earlier, Rich, we're just two guys from the 90s that are pretty much part of the last generation that was born in, like, the direct 90s here. And you're not going to be able to sell Mario 64 so many other times in the future. You just can't. It's not going to work.
We're the last generation of people, I think, that are nostalgic for that game.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it cannot, because I'm even thinking about myself, and the reason why I bought 3D All-Stars, because you could never have had these games other than on their respective consoles. There's not going to be a snowball's chance in hell for a future console that I'm going to rebuy this. The only game, because I'm actually sick in the head, that I would keep rebuying is a Super Nintendo game, and that's not going to sell a console for me even, and I'm not going to pay $60 for that. You bet your ass I wouldn't. So we got to just... You gotta be honest here. I'd be surprised if Nintendo kept doing the things that they were doing and then everybody still supported it. I think eventually it's gonna come to a head. So,
agreed.
Who's to say? Nintendo could also just do the same shit and they'll be profitable. But I don't think that would make sense as a business. And that's why I'm not working for any of them.
That's why we're doing this.
Listen, that's why you get my armchair expertise and my critical analyses. Instead of hearing it from Doug Bowser, you're hearing it from me.
There we go.
And that's a better source. You got to be honest.
Eric Ortiz. Eric,
thank you.
Before we get out of here, I have an exercise I want to run you through. I found a Twitter thread that I got very enticed with the goings-on of for about an hour the other night.
Okay.
What we're going to do right now, Eric, is we're going to...
You can tell I'm a little nervous.
We're going to cast a film. We're going to cast The Lord of the Rings, but with Muppets.
Okay. I knew this would be kind of fun. Okay, that's fun.
Yeah, I
like that.
I really enjoyed my time here. This is the most important one to me, so I'm going to get out of the way. I would cast Gonzo as both Boromir and Faramir.
Wow. You want to know something too? I immediately pictured him with his wigs.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me just make sure I'm getting the full. I want to make sure I have the actual Muppets cast listing here. Because I want to be appropriate to what we have, and I want to make sure I'm not missing any key people. Incredible. When I go to look at the Muppets on ABC, it immediately redirected me to a login screen for Comcast. Anyways, the great Gonzo is Boromir and Faramir?
Yeah.
I was even going to say make him Aragorn. Well, Kermit could probably be Aragorn.
Yeah, that's...
I
saw a lot of people saying Kermit's nephew Robin as Frodo.
But then who would Kermit be?
Kermit would be Bilbo in that scenario.
Ooh. Okay. You know what? Okay. I'm down with that. I'm actually okay with that. Because the idea of Kermit actually freaking the fuck out when he tries to take the ring back is pretty funny. And him giving the speech at his 11th birthday would also be hilarious. I think that Miss Piggy... No, but it fucks up everything.
No, here, by the way, this is another one of my favorite notes, because initially people go, okay. People immediately want to make Galadriel Miss Piggy. But, and hear me out on this, instead of Galadriel for Miss Piggy, make Galadriel Janice. Just be like, let me be your light in the dark, man, you know?
Oh my god, no, that would ruin it. Make Miss Piggy Galadriel, you know, god... Who would be Aragorn? That's the problem, because Aragorn is a big deal, And it's the Aragorn Arwen casting, because if you would have to,
yeah.
I would suggest that you would either make Aragorn Gonzo.
Scooter Frodo?
Scooter?
Yeah.
No, and then what? And what? No, what are we doing here?
Well, okay.
I thought we were being serious.
We are being serious. Fozzie is Samwise, right?
And then, this is why I kind of dig the whole Kermit being Bilbo and Robin being.
Yeah.
Robin being Frodo and Kermit not. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Yeah. But Fozzie can be Samwise. I want Gonzo to be Aragorn, and I want Arwen to be the chicken.
Okay. I like that a lot.
Because you need the romantic connection between them, and if it's not going to be Kermit and Miss Piggy, it has to be Gonzo and the chicken.
I like that a lot, actually. And here's another thing, because I'm torn on this. For Gollum, I'm between Animal and Sweetums.
It's got to be Animal. Sweetums would be good. Sweetums should actually play the role of Treebeard.
Yes! Oh,
I'm sorry. That's totally wrong. I'll give him two roles just because I'm looking at his fucking mug right now. He could either be Saruman or he could be Treebeard.
I was thinking Sam the Eagle for Saruman.
I take it back. That's actually better. But maybe Sam... But then who... Okay. I like technical difficulties.
Yeah, so where were we?
Sweetums would be the monsters, like the Balrog.
Yes, and the troll.
And he could even come back and reprise his role as Treebeard.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just big. Sam the Eagle could be Saruman. Ian McKellen could be...
Stays in the film as the only human.
He can be Gandalf in a groundbreaking role casting. That's fine.
This is another one I thought I would probably glance over, but I think he'd be okay with. Pepe and Rizzo as Merry and Pippin.
I'm okay with that. 150%. I'm trying to think for Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
I want to think what I want them as.
I actually read one that I thought was pretty good where they go, this is a difficult role. They go, Animal is Gollum physically, but Smeagol and Gollum's voices are Statler and Waldorf.
That actually wouldn't be bad either. Because they're both just two opposing voices. The role of a century. Yeah, I can't really think of with Statler and Waldorf, because duos in Lord of the Rings, they would fit. I'd be fine with that.
I like
the only thing with Statler, when I'm looking at his face, would be the King of Rohan, and but you need Waldorf,
yeah,
so it's like
the problem.
You need one or the other.
So I want to take Dr. Buns and Honeydew and Beaker, and respectively make them Gimli and Legolas.
This is going to be an obvious. Are you going to put Bunsen as Gimli?
Gimli, yeah.
And I was going to say make him Legolas.
Because I like Beaker of the Woodland Realm.
Yeah, and also he has the stature for it. He's just thin. He's like a stick. Yeah, and I can imagine Beaker just
with the long flowing
sliding
wind.
Down. Yeah, with the long hair. I even was thinking of Bunsen Honeydew with the long hair, too. I actually wanted Bunsen Honeydew to just be Elrond for no reason whatsoever.
How about Rolf the Dog as Elrond?
I wouldn't be opposed to that. I actually wouldn't be opposed to that either. I think Electric Mayhem, you'd have to break him up, obviously.
Yeah. Where does Dr. Teeth fall?
That's what I mean. Like, you'd have to break him up. But Dr. Teeth, I'd have to say... Oh, I don't fucking know. Make him like the King of Rohan.
Sure,
I don't know.
Fucking whatever.
It's such a difficult question.
Can we make Janice, what the fuck is her name? I really just want her to have a bit. Like, I'm like no man, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Janice should absolutely play that role and say, I am no man when she slays the Witch King. Abso-fucking-lutely. Put her in. Done. What a perfect casting.
My other, originally I had a thought where, like, that role was given to the chicken.
That's what I'm saying. I really just want that to happen. If Janice is Eowyn, cool,
yeah,
down,
yeah,
totally
cool
can see her
that.
Doing that. Pepe.
Pepe and Rizzo is Merry and Pippin. I still think that's...
Yeah, Pepe is still, that's fine. Camilla the chicken can absolutely be Arwen, you're good. Scooter...
What do we throw Scooter a bone?
I was just about that. I just put my hands together. What do we do about Scooter? I'm just looking at his fucking mug right now. I want somebody to be Sauron, but I don't know who to be Sauron. You know what I mean? I just don't know who could be Sauron.
I think Scooter should be the Witch King.
Not bad. Not bad. The rest of Electric Mayhem can be the Nazgul.
Okay.
Or the Ringwraiths.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, I like that a lot, actually.
Like the rest of them. You know what? Dr. Teeth...
Should Dr. Teeth be the Witch King, then?
Yeah, Dr. Teeth could be the Witch King. The rest of Electric Mayhem, barring Animal, which is, again, only leaving, like, three members, can be the Ringwraiths.
And Janice.
Yeah, Janice can double fill. There could be double roles here. That's okay. And... Who the fuck do we put for, the dog?
Oh, Rolf the dog is Elrond.
Who could Rolf be? Can Lou Zealand be Sauron? He's the dude with the, if I sent you his picture, I'll send it to your Skype. He could be Sauron. He's got the mug for it. Eh? You like him?
Oh, yeah. I actually...
He could be Sauron.
I had even read a recommendation in that Twitter thread that somebody cast him as Legolas, but he just shoots fish.
Yeah. That could happen.
But I think he's good for Sauron. I think I'm okay with that.
And I think Bobo the Bear can play the role of the Uruk-hai. I forgot which specific... I'm forgetting the name of the one main one.
The one from, like, all the Rohan stuff. Like,
yeah. He's, like, the guy.
Yeah, no, I know the orc in question.
Yeah. Like, he's the orc.
He's the one.
Wow, this was fun.
Wasn't it fun?
This is hard.
It's hard, but it's so fun. And when you think about it, it's just hilarious. And I do it very is, much because like the idea of keeping Ian McKellen as the one human man.
I agree with you. You know what? I completely forgot that you just actually do need a human for that.
Yeah. Most
if Miss Piggy was Miss Piggy being Galadriel and Bunsen asking her for a lock of her hair, it fucking sends me.
It's fantastic.
It sends me to a place of happiness.
I want this movie made.
Gonzo being the king of Gondor, it just fits.
Yeah.
They gotta get on it. I'm hoping, you know what, fingers crossed the Amazon series just ends up being this.
Yeah, it turns out
they just pull a switcheroo on you. They're like, yeah, it's here.
They were just making a Muppets Lord of the Rings.
And they just go, yeah, you're welcome.
We did The Hobbit, too.
Don't worry, we did it for all you Hobbit fans. Rich, thank you. That was pleasant.
I thought that'd be a fun way to end the show.
That's a nice surprise.
And
I love Twitter threads like that.
And like I said, it's more fun when I was gonna put it in the notes, but I'm like, then if you see it and you're thinking about it the whole show, it's much more fun to go in blind.
I was gonna say I would never even have a straight train of thought because I would always just keep thinking of characters.
All right, that,
we want to get out of here. You want to go ahead and do some housekeeping?
So thank you to Heather Ramos for our wonderful artwork and Ed Biquette for our intro. Ask us questions, geckogamespodcast@gmail.com. Find us over on Twitter. I am at TheRichmeister0. You are, of course, at Beautiful_Eric. It's been a pleasure to be here. We're going to get the hell out of here, and we'll see you next week.
All right, bye, everyone.